Hey, ya Blork. Welcome back to a brand new episode of Talkin' GC, the X Factor Show. The only podcast devoted solely to the original Peter David run of X Factor in the early 1990s. I am your host, Ryan. Today's episode is actually our final episode in this X Factor series. We are on 5 of 5. And we will be covering the last two full issues of the proper run, so issues 88 and 89, and then we are covering the story that Peter David wrote for X Factor Annual number 8. So issue 88 is a worthy follow-up to the last issue that we discussed, which was issue 87, the examinations issue. Like I said last episode, probably my favorite favorite issue of the entire Peter David run. I really love that issue. It's so good, such a fantastic issue, and there's like so much insight into each of these characters. It's really a shame that it comes so close to the end of his run, because he demonstrates like a really good understanding of what makes these characters tick, and of course what their insecurities are. One of the things about X-Men books is ever since the Claremont days, you know, X-Men has been a superhero soap opera. I'm not the first person to say it. I certainly won't be the last person to use that phrase, but I mean, that's exactly what it is. There's all these different interpersonal relationships and, you know, tragic backstories and all kinds of, you know, relationship statuses that are constantly in flux. It's one of the reasons why we keep coming back to all the various X titles as X-Men fans. It's because of that soap opera aspect, that thing where it's like, oh man, these characters are just as interesting when they're not in costume as they are when they're in costume. And it's, you get to see all of these things, and there's so many things that he could have played around with even further, so many different avenues he could have explored. But unfortunately, you know, his run comes to an end 2 issues after that one comes out. So it's a big shame, but either way, he kind of picks up with 88. With issue 88, we get like our first major character, original character that Peter David creates specifically for his run. You know, up to this point, all the members of the team, Val Cooper, Havoc, Polaris, Wolfsbane, Strong Guy, Multiple Man, Quicksilver, all of these characters existed before Mr. Sinister as a villain, existed before all the Genosha stuff that he's been working in of late. All of that stuff existed before Strife and the MLF, all of this stuff. It's not to say that he hasn't put original characters in here yet. I actually haven't looked them up, but I suspect that many of the Nasty Boys, their first appearance was issue 75, which would have been, you know, Peter David Creations, co-created with Larry Stroman. So I imagine that there's a lot of stuff that's been original content that Peter David created and added to the mythos. But this is really like the first major character that I feel has had like a lasting effect on the title. Maybe not the X books at large, but after the first like initial run-in with the Nasty Boys, like we rarely see those characters again. I'm hard pressed to think of like when was the last time I saw Ruckus or Gorgeous George or Ramrod. And you know, the one thing about the current era, the Krakoa era of comics, is that all of these minor characters or obscure characters or underutilized characters, a lot of them have been making the rounds, they've been making the return. So I wouldn't be shocked if someone reached out to me and was like, oh, hey Ryan, you know, like a lot of the Nasty Boys are like in, they've been showing up in the Krakoa era all the time or whatever. I wouldn't be surprised to hear that. But as far as the Nasty Boys go, like outside of the first few handful of appearances in this series and then their appearance in the animated series, they've made like one appearance in trading cards, you know, it's they don't seem to be characters that have like staying power. Whereas like Random himself, this is his first appearance. And then later on in the series, after like long after Peter David leaves, he kind of cements himself as like a recurring character. And then like even a member of the team, like he kind of joins the team and lasts all the way up until the cancellation of volume 1 of X Factor with issue 149. So he ends up cementing himself as like a pretty major character for the last half of this run. And here we go. Like, we're about to jump into his first appearance. So X-Factor 88 says random violence on the cover. We get cover work here from Joe Quesada. We've got this new character that we've never seen before. This like dude with like white skin, and one of his hands appears to be like a big giant like cannon. And he seems to be wearing like a bandana, and like a, he's got barbed wire wrapped around his arm. Like, he looks pretty cool. Like, he looks like a pretty sweet character for a 1993 appearance. And even like the first page is just a dude. He's got a cigar. He's got attitude. You know, he's one of those classic like early 90s tough guys that are just tough for the sake of toughness. And again, even on the inside, the issue is still called Random Violence. Of course, we see written by Peter David, pencils from Joe Quesada, inks from Al Milgrom. Colorist, it just says Ariane or Ariana, perhaps, not sure. And then Starkey, letters from Richard Starkings. And we see it's this new character, this random guy, and he's looking out towards the reader. And we see, like, in the reflection of his sunglasses, there's like a police officer that's showing him like his ad in a newspaper that says, "Got a mutant problem? Call the expert." Of course, it's the X dash, you know, pun that they like to throw around in all of the X books, especially in the early 90s when they lost all self-control and were like, just put whatever you can in there. I'm okay with it. I love it, as I'm a big pun guy. So I like all these just terrible X puns. Pretty much what the guy's saying is like, even though the mayor agrees with you and how you handle stuff, like, it doesn't mean that I'm okay with it. So like, consider yourself being watched. Like, you're on a short leash, all right? And we see that he's like a bounty hunter who's been hired by the mayor to go into this hospital and like arrest all of the mutates from Genosha, like all the Genoshan, the expatriates, as they're being called. Like, he's been hired by the mayor to go in there and like round them all up and arrest them for, you know, being in the city illegally and in the country illegally and all that. And pretty much just being a nuisance, right? Like, ever since Taylor was mugged, not even mugged, but like just beaten in the park a few issues back, like before we jumped into the Executioner song, that was the last. I should probably do a recap, huh? Because, you know, 87 was the fallout of the Executioner song. The three issues immediately preceding that, 86, 85, 84, were all the tie-ins to the Executioner song. So if you all remember, issue 83 was X-Factor going into that ship and like agreeing to bring members of the expatriates into the country and just kind of show them around, you know, just keep them occupied. And there was a Scottish mutate who kind of developed like a, you know, fast friends with Rain, who was also Scottish, and she took him to the museum. And while at the museum, she loses track of him. He wanders out into the park and he's then beaten by a bunch of human bigots and they rush him to the hospital. So now that the Executioner song is over and done with, now that, you know, the government bureaucracy has required them to meet with a therapist, a psychologist, and Dr. Samson in the last issue, now we can finally jump back into the story that Peter David was working on before he was forced into a line-wide crossover, which of course is one of the reasons why he chose to leave the X office and to leave X Factor, is for stuff like that. So he's picking back up now where he left off, and we have Random hired to go in there and arrest the expatriates. We do get a scene where the sheriff and a couple of the other officers here, they have their guns out. They're not necessarily threatening Random or anything, but they have their guns out just in case. And all of their guns just like rust away, turn into dust, and kind of like melt out of their hands. And we can only assume that's Random, you know, that Random was the one that did that, because they don't usually do that. So Random himself, we finally get like our first really good shot of him, and he's definitely dressed like a biker. Like I said, he's got like barbed wire wrapped around his arm, like wrapped around his bicep. He's got tattoos on each shoulder. He's got a bandana. He's got like a leather vest with no shirt on underneath. He's got, you know, big boots for stomping around with these like giant, massive steel toes in there. And then his ability, well, at least one of his abilities, it seems that he's able to like change his arms into like, I don't know, bio cannons or something like that. So we see him like mutating his arm, changing his left arm from like the elbow down into like a three-barreled cannon type thing. And at that point, he starts strolling into this hospital. Like, meanwhile, we actually have X-Factor also arriving here at the hospital, and they're coming to check on Taylor now that they've wrapped up all of their other Executioner song stuff. We do get a little notation here that says, like, Quicksilver is not part of the team because Val granted him some time off. And then we get an editor's note saying, like, see story immediately following this one. It's actually in the issue. It's just a backup story that's included in this issue. And we get one next issue as well. Since Quicksilver isn't actually part of this story, we get to, you know, get a sneak peek of what's going on with him in a backup story that's included in the issue. So it's not like you had to buy a separate issue where there was random tie-ins or whatever. He just has a separate story that's going on as a backup for this one. So meanwhile, before they're able to enter the hospital, Random has already gotten inside, and he's pretty much says, like, all right, expatriates, you can come in peace or not. You know, like, it doesn't matter to me. I get paid the same either way. So let's make it peaceful. Let's not. And Lucas, who's the, like, the shape-shifting guy, we kind of get a little bit more definition of his power. He is kind of like Daniel Moonstar, where he can reach into your psyche and find something you're afraid of. And then rather than like projecting it as an image, he can like shapeshift into that. So he's trying to find what Random is afraid of to shapeshift. And he's like, I'm being blocked out. That's impossible. This doesn't make any sense. And then, you know, so Random is like, all right, I guess you're the first one I'm going to have to teach a lesson to. But that point, Pirouette, also known as Jobeth, who had been getting pretty close to Guido up to this point, she starts doing her, I guess, again, like, her powers are kind of ill-defined. I don't know if it's her that's spinning or if she's just able to create, like, spinning wind, kind of like, what's his name, Rip? I always want to say Ripclaw, but I know it's Riptide. Ripclaw is from, Malibu Comics, maybe? Image, I think. Maybe, no, Ripclaw is one of the dudes from Cyberforce. What am I saying? Anyway, she starts trying to do this, and, like, it doesn't work for him. It doesn't move him or anything. He refers to her as Windy, so I'm guessing she just makes, like, cyclones. And she also notices that her power is having no effect, and he's like, yeah, like, I'm just generating my own whirlwind that's moving counter to yours, which just cancels it out. But we get another guy who, like, dives at him, and he just holds up a fist, and the dude runs into his fist and everything. And then Prodigal comes up, and I don't even know what Prodigal's powers are either. He appears to have some sort of metal manipulation sort of power. But of course, you know, Random's weapons he makes from his own body, so it's his own biological thing. There's no metal involved. And he says, he's like, here's the deal. Like, I've been hired to bring you all in. So stop attacking me. Like, you can't beat me and all that. And eventually, like, Jobeth is like, all right, cool. I can't hit you with my wind power. So I'll just like dive on you and just like scratch you. And he smacks her down to the ground. He just like kind of grabs her off his back and just like slams her down onto the floor of the hospital. And then we finally get a voice from off panel that says, Jobeth. Oh, you blew it, cousin. And we turn and we see that X-Factor has finally arrived on scene. Like, they were making their entrance and now they've caught up to what's going on. And they see that here's this dude like attacking the expatriates. So Guido just walks over, he clobbers him. And it's interesting to point out that like he kind of clobbers him like right in the kisser. And Random, when he gets punched, he kind of like turns into not necessarily like a goop, but almost like this weird, it almost looks like Mr. Fantastic. If you've seen Multiverse of Madness, what Wanda does, I probably should have said spoilers, but that movie's what, 10 months old now and is on streaming services. So my bad. If I spoiled that for you, I really apologize. But he kind of seems to like come unraveled in a gooey kind of way. it's really interesting. Like it's a really interesting visual. And of course, Guido has the appropriate response where he's just like, oh, yuck. Of course, Random is able to kind of pull himself together. And at that point, Guido notices that like his face is reverting to what it was. And he's like, what are you, like a shapeshifter or something? Like you got your arm, you got your face. And Random kind of explains his powers here. He says, you know, I'm the kind of guy who goes with the flow when needs be. I'm all things to all people. I'm Random and you're Toast. So it doesn't necessarily sum up what his powers are, but through the course of the series, like his powers are almost like Darwin from the X-Men, who's introduced, you know, years later. But his power is to, you know, adapt to survive. Any kind of situation that he's in where his life is in danger, he will automatically adapt to that situation, generally to that habitat, to make himself able to live in that, you know, whatever environment he finds himself. If he's in the vacuum of space, he'll adapt to become a creature that can survive in the vacuum of space. If he's deep underwater, if he's in a active volcano, then his body will just like reactively adapt to any situation. Random kind of has that ability as well. If a mutant is there trying to use their powers on him, his body will immediately adapt in order to combat what those powers would be. And which is why we've seen him successfully take on each member of the Expatriates, and why we see him start taking on the rest of X-Factor. So Guido got there first. Now the rest of X-Factor has arrived. Rain is the first one to attack. She just leaps at him. And he like whistles. It's like a dog whistle almost, where she like falls out of the sky. She's on her knees. She's like covering her ears, screaming, you know. So I have to imagine it's a dog whistle because no one else is affected by that. You know, specifically, it only affects Rain. Next up is Jamie kind of lunges as well. And so he hits him with like a rubber disc that kind of shoots out of his like hand cannon thing. He says it's like he didn't really say what it is. He just like hits him with like a rubber frisbee. Next up is Havoc. Havoc is walking up to him, and Random kind of turns on him next. And he's like, dude, you like, we're in a hospital. Like you can't use your powers against me. Even if you could, I'd adapt. But like, really, you're going to throw plasma blasts at me? And Havoc walks up to him and he's like, no, like I'm not an idiot. Like I'm the leader of X-Factor for a reason. And he stops a few feet short of Random, and he like puts his hand in his like inner jacket pocket, and he goes to pull something out, and it's a checkbook. And he's like, here's the deal, Random. I heard what you said to the Expatriates, that you get paid regardless of, you know, what condition they're in when you bring them in. And so he's like, what are they paying you to do it? And Random says like, you know, they're paying me like $3,500 or whatever. Something like that, or they're paying me like $1,500, something like that, he tells him. And so Havoc is like, all right, here you go. I'm going to write you a check from like X-Factor's very own, operating account. Here you go, $4,000. And why don't you just take this check and walk away? And Random's like, done. So he takes the check, he puts it in his pocket, and he tells Alex, he's like, dude, I'd have settled for $3,000. And Alex is like, well, the joke's not just on me, because I'd have gone as high as $5,000. And so, you know, Random says like, pleasure doing business. And he puts the check away. He turns his weird hand cannon thing back into a regular hand, and he just walks out the door, just leaves. You know, he a better offer to walk away than to bring him in. So that's what he does. And Prodigal comes over and he's like, dude, like I question your ethics, man. Like, you're just paying the guy off. And Havoc goes to him and he's like, he was right. We're in a hospital. Like, what am I supposed to do? Destroy this entire hospital to stop him from doing what you're doing? He's like, I did the diplomatic thing, the thing that was going to save lives and save property. I paid him off. Like, whatever. That's how it is. It was necessary. But at this point, Havoc is like, look, man, like I'm tired of all the shenanigans with the Expatriates. Like, you got a guy who's sick here. You just immediately start fighting this dude in a hospital, And then you chastise me. Like, I've had it. We're taking you guys back to Genosha. Like, trust us. Genosha is fine now. I've overseen a lot of its reconstruction myself, and I'm taking you back. Frankly, you need medical help anyway. And it, like, this just proves that the people here are not ready to provide you with that assistance. So the expatriates agree. They're like, all right, you're right. Like, we can't argue with that kind of logic. It's obvious that we're not welcome here. And you've done nothing but protect us and try to help us. So we will trust you. Let's go back to Genosha. So they all hop on the X-Factor plane and fly on back. We get one last little side plot where we actually see that Rain was like really glad that Jamie expressed such concern for her when Random whistled, like dog whistled at her. And so now she is telling Jamie that she cares for him. And when she tells him that, it's got like little hearts and stuff. And even the word bubble is shaped like a heart. So it's like she's taken all of that affection that she had for Alex, and now she's putting it towards Jamie. She even mentions like that he's the closest one to her age on the team. So Jamie doesn't know what to make of it. He's like, ah. And he gets back and he like goes back to in the back of the plane to where like Polaris is. And he's like, hey, I need to talk to you about Rain. It seems that I'm going to be the object of her affection going forward. Like, what am I supposed to do? And they're like, well, you know, we are heading back to Genosha. And that seems to be where she went through all of those changes in the first place. So hopefully we can not only help the expatriates, but maybe we can get to the bottom of why Rain has changed and why she's behaving so strangely. And right before we get to Genosha, we got one last page where we're introduced to the president of Genosha. I don't actually think we catch her name here, just that she is the president of Genosha, and she introduces a visiting president from an unnamed country to Dr. Sasha Ryan, who's the director of genetics, and Dr. Moira McTaggart, who is a specialist in mutations, and they are here to help the mutates like move forward. Here we go. President Mabawa of our neighboring Asnia. But I still don't know what the president of Genosha's name is. They just call her Madam President, which makes sense, but either way, I'm sure we'll get it in the next issue. But after this introduction, Dr. Ryan leaves, and she goes to this lab somewhere, and she's standing in front of these metal doors. She puts like her ID in there, and it says priority access granted. And she says to herself, soon, very soon, everything will be ready, and the mutate problem will be solved. And then in the next word balloon, in like bold, kind of, you know, scary writing, is permanently, and it's underlined, and it says to be continued. So we can see that Dr. Ryan clearly is up to no good. And that takes us into our backup story, which is called Time Out. So this backup story is also written by Peter David, pencils from Chris Batista, inks from Andrew Pipoy, letters from Lois Buhalis, and then colors from Ariane yet again. So I have to say, like, I like the coloring in this. I like the pencil work. Chris Batista does a really great job in these, like, four pages that we get. Five. Yeah, it looks like eight pages that we get here. So it's a pretty interesting story. Pretty much what happens is they're in Val Cooper's office back in Washington, D.C., and Quicksilver enters, and he's like, hey, I need some personal time off. There's a personal matter I have to attend to. It seems that I've been able to get in contact with my wife, Crystal, who at this point he's estranged from. And he's like, you know, we've been talking, and we've kind of decided that, you know, maybe we're ready to see if we can't reconcile things to kind of rebuild the parts of our marriage that have fallen apart. And I'd really like some time off. And Val goes, not only am I going to give you time off, but I have a cabin up in the woods in this small town. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's secluded. She tosses him the keys. She's like, why don't you and Crystal go there? You don't even have to pay anything. Just head up there and, you know, have the time that you want. Save your marriage. You've definitely earned the time off. And you know, you're deep down inside, you're actually a good person. And, you know, you deserve to reconcile your marriage if you can. And he's like, thanks, Val. I really appreciate that. So he does. He heads out. We see him. He's grabbed Crystal. They arrive in this, you know, beautiful small town in the winter, you know, a nice winter cabin. It's secluded and romantic and everything. They have some husband and wife time as they're in the middle of reconciling. And everything seems to be going well until the very last page where we see that this cabin has in fact been bugged, not by like Val Cooper and the government, but by these nefarious citizens in the town. Some guys like listening in on Quicksilver and Crystal while they're in this cabin. And then he immediately gets on the horn with someone and he says, yeah, they're up there. All right. Time to put the operation into effect. And then it also says continued. So this quick little Quicksilver interlude has come to an end. And from there, we can move into our final full issue of the Peter David run. And I have to say, before we jump into it, it's not the end of a story. It's the middle of a longer story that Peter David was working on. And so we don't actually get, we don't get to see him close out his final storyline. After this issue, Scott Lobdell comes in as like the plotter, or at least the penciler, and they wrap it up in the next like three issues, but it's not written by Peter David. So we are just stopping with issue 89, and then we're going to cover the X-Factor annual, but that's it. So issue 89 is titled Branded on the cover. We see it's like a close-up of Rain's face in her hybrid werewolf form. She's got tears streaming down her eyes. She's got saliva and, you know, drool, I guess, you know, in her snarling maw. And she's got the number 490 like branded into her forehead. So we open the issue. We're looking at this first page here, and it's like this big giant door is opening. Someone on the inside of this door is yelling out like, Sasha Ryan, where are you? Very well, you're not here. I'll wait. And then we go to what has to be like, I don't know, the Genosian government, how it's set up. We know that they have a president, but I don't know how the rest of it works. So I'm only assuming this is like the Capitol building or their version of the White House, you know, the presidential palace or whatever it happens to be. And it's X-Factor arriving, as well as the expatriates. They are arriving here at the, I'm just going to call it the presidential palace. And we see again, you know, written by Peter David, pencils from Joe Quesada, inks from Al Milgram, colors from Glynis Oliver. So she returns to the title after a few issues, and letters from Richard Starkings. So we go inside, and here we see X-Factor and the expatriates. They are being introduced to the president, who is, you know, welcoming them back to their country and telling them that she has exciting new news for them, that the government now is pro-mutant, they're pro-mutate, they are trying to make amends to the expatriates as well as the rest of their brethren here. And so eventually we run into Moira. You know, Rain is happy to see her, as well as Jamie Madrox. Although it's not quite a happy reunion, because he still feels a little betrayed by her testimony way back when she backed up the dupe. But I mean, in all fairness, you know, regular Jamie didn't know about the other dupe, but you know, she had spent some time with him, so she had heard that story. She didn't do it out of any kind of spite or anything like that. All that she knew is that there was a Jamie who did go and spend time with the fallen angels. So again, she kind of apologizes. At this point, Rain gets a little frisky and actually gives Jamie's rear end a little pinch. It's a fun change of pace. Of course, we also see that she's kind of still making like hearts to Alex as well. So she's just like all over the place. Like, I don't know if what the intention here was. Apparently her hormones are just raging because she's still like a young teen. I think she's like 15 by now, maybe 16, something like that. So she's still not quite like this full grown adult. And of course she still has problems because of what was done to her when she was a mutate. So just a fun little like Jamie feeling super awkward about everything. And we turn the page and we check in with another new character, and we see that it's a place called Chalker Labs. So we automatically know that it's probably not something good, as we've heard the name Chalker before recently. And someone's yelling, you know, from inside this building, someone's yelling, "It's all my fault. The death of my brother, Vic Chalker, and my cousin, Mick Chalker. It's all because of me, Dick Chalker, a.k.a. Carnivore." And I have to stop it there because I'm pretty sure, I'm going to have to go back and double check, but like off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure that the other Chalker was not named Mick Chalker. And I'm pretty sure the other one was named Rick Chalker. And when that Chalker was talking about Vic, he mentioned that Vic was his brother. I'm talking right now about number one fan. Like, I'd have to go back because I think it was like issue 83 that he was introduced for that one page or two pages or whatever it was. But I thought that he specifically made mention of the fact that Vic was his older brother and had made himself into number one fan as to get vengeance for Vic's death, who had died in his like giant mech suit that he was really bad at engineering and making, and then walked it out into the rain, even though that all of his like electrical circuits were not protected against rain. So anyway, we see that this person Carnivore is like a big giant like dinosaur. He looks kind of like a cross between like a T-Rex, a Velociraptor, and a crocodile, like a three-way mix of those characters. And he refers to himself, he says, "The mutant outcast of the family. I've used my mutant dinosaur power until now to commit robberies, murder, mayhem, postal fraud, all the time blackening the family name of Chalker and inciting mutant hatred in my kin, but no more. Their deaths are on my conscience. I must atone." So he runs outside of his of the Chalker Labs in order to, I don't know, start tracking down mutants, you know, his fellow mutants to get revenge. And he runs out in front of a Mack truck that's barreling down the highway. And that is the end of Dick Chalker, a.k.a. Carnivore. But we're left here with a promise. It says, "Despite what some of you may think, there really is a point to all this Chalker nonsense, a point beyond the lesson of what happens when good writers go bad. But you will have to check out this year's X Factor Annual to understand. Otherwise, you will be left with the belief that life is a senseless exercise of destructive power. A sad message, yes, but one that can prepare you for a job in the exciting field of government bureaucracy." Thank you, the management. So like the Chalkers before him, Dick does not last very long. He's introduced and killed off like almost right away. From here, we go back to Genosha, and Rain is having one of her classic breaks with reality, this time in the form of Aladdin, where she has taken on the form of the genie and Alex has taken on the form of Aladdin, and she refers to him as Al X Adden, or Alex Adden, I guess. But either way, we see that it's yet another dream, and when she wakes up, she is being tested. She's gone back into her full human form, so she's no longer in her hybrid form or her straight up werewolf form or her full wolf form. She is back in her regular human girl form, and we know that it's in that form that she seems to revert back to her days of being kind of like a mindless mutate. It's not quite the same. She seems to at least have some semblance of self in this form right now, but either way, she's going through these tests. All of a sudden, as she's trying to escape, she's like chained up and everything. As she's trying to escape, who comes in but Alex on horseback, and he's holding a brand that's number 490, and he brands Rain's forehead, and she wakes up from a nightmare, and we see that she's actually back in her hybrid form. So all of this, it was in fact a dream, and she's crying, she's in tears. Moira comes running in because she hears Rain scream out no, and Rain just says like, things are getting worse, I'm not glad that I'm back, like somehow everything's getting worse. And Moira's like, yes, Lass, like we'll run some more tests, we'll try to figure it out. You know, it's good that you're here so I can help you. So very sad moment for Rain. She can't seem to escape this trauma, and it appears that being back in Genosha, although it allows them to possibly get to the bottom of it, it's still like really hard for Rain. So a very sad moment, but we change scenes. This time we are with Guido and Joe Beth, and they go and they check in on Joe Beth's grandma. And she just says like, I'm home. And she's like, oh, darling, like, I'm so glad you're home. And she's like, yeah, this is Guido. And the grandma gives Guido like a big hug on his arm because, you know, he brought her grandbaby home. So a sweet moment between Guido and Joe Beth here. And then we are taken to like the garden of the presidential palace, where we see Alex is like unhappy with quite a bit of what he's seeing here, as the president tries to explain to him that the mutates, they're no longer secondary citizens, they're no longer slaves to the government, although as they're trying to like be deprogrammed, as they're trying to get back to a normal life, it helps to kind of transition them out of servitude. And so despite the fact that they are free citizens, that they are paid a wage, that they are given their own places to live that are theirs, that they control, many of them are still working for the government, but they're being put into like constructive fields. A lot of them are like, I don't know what they're called. The people that make like lawn animals, shrub animals. I don't know what they're called. I don't think that scissors handing is the right term for that. I feel like I know it, like it's right on the tip of my tongue, but I can't think of it right now. But like a lot of them are doing that. We see all these like really elaborate garden sculptures. I don't know. But a lot of them are also, they're serving refreshments, they're serving drinks to the president. One of the mutates actually drops the tray and spills and like has a meltdown, and neither Prodigal nor Alex are happy with what they see. But the president is trying to respond like, yes, this is the very behavior that we're trying to break. We're trying to get them back into normal behavior, and so we're like allowing them to work with us so that we can show them compassion and that sort of thing. It seems that maybe Alex himself isn't quite sold, but Prodigal seems to think like, yeah, actually maybe this like is a good idea, you know, to give them an outlet, to kind of detransition them from being like mindless mutates into actual real people again. That like easing them back into normal work is a good thing. And like giving them something constructive to do, something to build rather than destroy is also good. Something beautiful to build though. Like they're not building war machines. They're not building tanks and that sort of stuff. Like they're creating art, you know, these beautiful shrub sculptures. That's not the right term, but that's all I can think of right now. I'm like, that is not even close, but oh well. Another time we go and we check in with Moira and Rain, who are kind of walking around on their own. And, you know, Rain's just kind of telling Moira that she's, you know, she's having a hard time with her thoughts and that sort of stuff. But she's also having a hard time with not just her thoughts, but just, you know, all kinds of stuff. And so eventually they get to Moira's lab, and so they start to like run some tests on on Rain, and they're asking her about her feelings towards Alex, her feelings towards Jamie now, and Rain's kind of like, these aren't normal thoughts. I don't usually have them. I hadn't really had thoughts like this before, and it doesn't seem right. Like, I'm a good girl. And she starts like to mutate back into her like more like wolfman, werewolf type form. Not full on werewolf, but pretty close. And she like rips all the bandages, not bandages, but like all the apparatuses off of her and everything. And she like runs out of the lab screaming, make it stop. So just a very sad moment for Rain. It kind of makes me think of this part in a Wolverine issue, and I'm forgetting the issue off the top of my head, but it's an issue where like Jean and Xavier are in Wolverine's mind, and they're trying to break down some of the walls of his trauma that he has in his mind. And they get to a particular part of his psyche that's like very animalistic. It's very instinctual rather than logical and that sort of thing. And it like, it causes them to leave his mind before they accidentally do damage to his mind with that particular part of him. And like, it sends him into this rage where he's like, I'm not an animal. I'm a man. I swear I'm a man. And then he like rips off his shirt and like starts howling and like runs out into the forest screaming, I'm a man. And it's like, yeah, that's usually how men respond when they're accused of being men, is they rip all their clothes off and just run out into the forest screaming, I'm a man, while they're howling, you know, into the night. This scene kind of gives me those thoughts where she's like, I'm a girl, I'm a good girl, and then she turns into a wolf and runs away. At this point, we check back in with Sasha Ryan. This time we're outside that door again that we saw in the very first page of the issue. This time she opens the door and says, I'm here, you know, obviously referring to whoever it is that's on the other side of the door. And we don't really know who it is. All we see is this character like shrouded in darkness, enveloped by smoke. And all he says is like, I've been waiting for you and you're finally here. I can't wait much longer. And she's like, look, here's the deal. We're going to have to put our plans on hold because the expatriates just arrived, and with them, X-Factor has as well. And so if they're here on Genosian soil and we start our plan into motion, that they'll probably mess it up. And so he's like, fine, I'll wait a little bit longer, but only because I respect you. And then he says like, but I swear the day will come that our country will once again be free of the genetic dregs known as mutants. So I'm pretty sure this is supposed to be the Jean-Janeer, like, who is now also merged with the Phalanx, the way that Cameron Hodge did. I'm probably misremembering. But in my reread through to get prepared for the Peter David run, this is his last issue. So I stopped. I didn't reread those last few issues that actually close out this Genosha arc. So either way, and then we're given our next backup sequence here. It's like another 8 or so pages of the Quicksilver story. Last time, Quicksilver and Crystal had arrived at Val Cooper's cabin here in wherever. It's kind of where we pick up. Like, they ended the last issue with them having like a romantic evening together. And so it's the next morning. Crystal is out taking a shower in the rain outside. And you know, Quicksilver comes out and just kind of watches her and then decides to, you know, join her in bathing in the rain, I guess. I should probably point out again, written by Peter David, same art team, pencils from Chris Batista, inks from Al Milgram, letters from Lois Pujalas, and colors this time from Glynis Oliver. I have to say like how much I enjoy Chris Batista's pencils. Like, they're actually really good. I might even like the artwork in his, you know, 16 pages more than the artwork that we get from Joe Quesada, which is odd because like I'm generally a fan of Joe Quesada art. But yeah, the Chris Batista art's really good. It's like very detailed. It kind of reminds me of like late 70s artwork that we'd seen from like John Byrne, not necessarily in style, but just in like the way they draw the details, especially like the details of the hair, the facial expressions, that sort of stuff. So even the backgrounds, like they're outside, and some of these panels, they're just like a white background, because it's like a close-up of one of the characters' faces. And so because, you know, facial expressions are difficult to draw, you just draw the close-up of the face. You don't draw the background. But like the ones where it's like, you know, mid-depth and all that, they render the background. So you get like beautiful mountains and trees and snow-covered shrubbery and that sort of stuff. It's just, there's a lot of detail in the artwork, and I really like it. Like I think that I would have enjoyed if Chris Bautista had been like a regular artist on the series, filling in for Larry Stroman or taking over for Joe Quesada. Either way, it kind of, they wake up, they bathe, you know, they get clean in the morning rain, and then they watch the sunrise, remarking on how beautiful it is. They kind of talk about their relationship. There's a little bit of comedy of errors when Quicksilver admits to Crystal that he's been seeing someone. And at first she thinks that he's talking about like another relationship, but he uses he. And so she's like, she's really confused, especially when he says Rain has also been seeing this person, even though the age difference is there. But, you know, then he mentions like every person needs a psychiatrist, and she's old enough to not need a child psychiatrist anymore. And so Crystal realizes like, oh, I was misunderstanding you. You're not in some weird, you know, situation that is not normal for us. And she actually thinks it's really good. She's like, that's great. You know, it's good to talk about things. At that point, they realize that they're actually out of food. So she sends him into town to get some of the essentials, you know, some chicken, some applesauce, you know, they're going to make a nice applesauce chicken lunch. So he, like I said, he heads down to the normal store. And while he's in the like general store in this small little town, he's approached by some random dude in like a business suit who's holding a folder, and he walks up to Quicksilver and he says like, my name's Torque, and I cover the superhero beat for the National Reporter, and I just wanted to show you some photos I think you might be interested in seeing. And it's like photos of Crystal dancing with some dude, and he pretty much tells Quicksilver here, he's like, yeah, I don't know what you've been up to, it seems you've been up to doing, you know, government stuff, but Crystal's been out here having this relationship with this dude. Look, here's pictures of them having the gall to dance with one another. And he pretty much tells Quicksilver, like, you know, if you pay me some money, I will withhold publishing these photos. And Quicksilver like rips up the photos, tells the guy they're fake, punches him right in the face. And then pretty much tells him like, I'm not going to pay you. What I'm going to do is tell you that if you do publish these photos, you know, accidents happen. I can move at super speed and faster than the eye can see. And accidents happen all the time, man. So he pretty much just threatens this dude, pretty much saying like, I can end you. I can severely hurt you if you publish these photos. So think about that. And that's pretty much it. At that point, he speeds home, and Crystal greets him, and she's like, wow, that was really slow. You know, you must be slowing way down. It took you, you know, all of 5 minutes or whatever. And he's like, yeah, let me ask you, are you seeing someone? And Crystal's like, no, but like, why are you asking me? What happened in the town? Why are you asking me this? And he's like, oh, no reason. I swear. And then he puts the groceries away. We check back in with the dude, with this Torque dude. He makes mention that, you know, Quicksilver doesn't know that there aren't other photos and all that. Cause he's trying to, he does tell Quicksilver that there's like other more explicit photos. But there aren't. He's like, Quicksilver doesn't know that those don't exist. And this other guy's like, yeah, like this is very good. Things are going to be different between them from now on. Like this is an excellent day. And, you know, we've stimulated the homicidal impulses of the son of Magneto. And then the issue ends with like three last panels where it's Crystal is laying in bed. She's crying to herself. And she says like, Pietro, I want to go home tomorrow. And then it's a close up of Pietro. He says, fine. And then it's like a zoomed out and they're like, they're laying in bed, but they're like on the opposite edges of the bed. They're like, they're not touching. They're not looking at each other. So, I mean, you can see that whatever it was that they were rebuilding based on how well the last issue went, it's been destroyed now. And like that, that's it. That is the end of Peter David's run on X Factor. There's one more issue that we're going to cover because it's a story that he wrote for the X Factor annual, which had been written before his run came to an end. It just wasn't published until afterwards. So we'll cover that next, but that's it. The Peter David run comes to an end. It's really too bad. I really want to see where he was taking these characters. I doubt that the way this arc ends is how Peter David originally planned. Going off of memory, at one point the X Factor team finds themselves like in the sewer system of Genosha, fighting against some magistrate people in armor. And like at one point, Jamie is exposed to the legacy virus and he contracts it and eventually dies. And they save him somehow. And I don't know, like, it all comes to a head really during like the Haven story, which is like issue 100. Like, there's all kinds of stuff. Like I said, Scott Lobdell comes in and writes for a while before they turn to the new series writer, which is J.M. DeMatteis, which was fine. Like, I feel like once he got on the book kind of got back on the right track. He still kind of had that signature humor from Guido, although all the stuff with Jamie, all the stuff with Rain, it's not really resolved in a way that I think Peter David would have done it. So it's a huge bummer that his run ends here. Obviously, he returns to the book many years later, and writes like a huge fan, has a huge fan favorite run that lasts well over like 100 issues. It's where Jamie Madrox kind of puts a new X Factor team together. They become X Factor Investigations. It's him. It's Strong Guy. We also have like M is on the team and Siren is on the team. And it's a really great series. It's a really great run, but it doesn't have quite the heart that this first run does. There's just so much humor, and it was kind of like the not necessarily irreverent, but it was like the comedic take on X books. You know, we had the very dark X Force, we had X-Men and Uncanny X-Men also kind of doing some dark stuff, we had like Wolverine and Cable also being very serious in tone, and although we had Excalibur, which was also somewhat light by this point, I believe, is like Alan Davis had left the book again, and like Warren Ellis had come in, and like a couple of the members of the team, the original team, are gone, and so they bring in new characters. You got like Doug Locke and Pete Wisdom, and the book starts to also take on like a more serious tone, and it wasn't easy to find in the US anyway, because it was mostly made for like Marvel UK. So it was like big there, but not as big in the US anyway. So they were kind of missing that lighthearted book. And Peter David's X Factor, it filled that gap. And it was really great. I've had just a heck of a time rereading this run yet again to prepare, and then reading these issues, having them available as I'm like kind of thumbing through them, as I walk through what happens in each of these issues. It's been so fun talking about this run for the last 5 episodes. It's been an absolute blast. So I think let's jump into this last story as told in X Factor Annual number 8 and finish out talking GC. So here we go. X Factor Annual number 8, it's the 1993 annual for X Factor. It says 64-page annual right there on the cover. And we have X Factor going up a group of villains that we haven't really seen. I mean, we have if we've been following the series. So the exosuit-wearing Vic Chalker, the number one fan, something Chalker. I forgot to go back and check if it was Rick or Mick, but whatever. And of course, there is Carnivore Dick Chalker right here on the cover, and someone that we haven't seen yet. Of course, it also has our heroes, some of them at least. I don't see Rain on here, but I do see the rest of X Factor. So we jump in. Obviously, we're not going to cover the entire issue. The way that the annuals used to work is there would be like a 40-page, you know, like double-sized story, and then there would be a few smaller stories, sometimes 8 pages, sometimes 10, 12, whatever. Just depends on what they put into the issue. And so that's kind of the case here. We have the first story, which is the Peter David story. This one's about 40 pages long, give or take. And then we have two smaller stories. I think one's 12 pages, and I think the other one is 8 pages. But those are both written by Skip Dietz with Buzz as the penciler. So we're not covering those. We're just covering the last piece, which is the Peter David piece. So this story is called Charon. And it's written by Peter David. We have pencils from Terry Shoemaker. We have inks from Mark McKenna. We have letters by Lois Buchholz and colors from Joe Rosas. And it starts in the past. It says it was a dark and stormy night. Well, actually, it was dark and night, but the storm was not there. Not for a number of years yet. Charon. And so we see it's a splash page. There is what appears to be a wealthy family, a mother, father, and a child, and they are crossing the street after leaving a movie. And it looks like the movie that was playing is Batman, starring Adam West and Burt Ward. So, you know, the 1966 Batman series, the movie that they had done. And so the family's talking, and we see that the kid is named Charlie. And he's with his parents. They're crossing the street and they decide to take a shortcut down a dark alley. Clearly, they don't understand the irony of the situation. They just got out of a movie where the hero literally found himself in this exact same situation. But they walk down this dark alley, and in this alley is what appears to be like a mobster. He's like got a trench coat and a hat on and everything. He's in the dark alley. And he's like, come on, move. Don't make me come to you. And he appears to have like a firearm. And he goes to take like the wife's pearls. And the husband's like, no, don't. And so the dad fights back. And eventually both of the parents are killed. And we see that it was random. It's like this dude with like pale skin and everything. And we see that one of his arms, just like random, he's able to not necessarily mutate it, but like morph it into like that three-barreled hand cannon or a regular hand. And that's what he does. And he tells the kid, like, you know, you don't want to mess with me. He says, I'm a mutant, Sonny, and believe me, you don't want to mess with me. And the police arrive. We figure out that the kid is named Charlie Ronalds. So the scene changes. It's a few years later. Now we see, instead of like a young 8 or 9 year old Charlie Ronalds, now we see perhaps like a teenage Charlie Ronalds, I would say anywhere from like 13 to 15, somewhere around here. And he's on the playground at school. He's watching his classmates playing basketball. They're like, hey man, why don't you get in the game? And he smacks the ball away and he's like, why would I want to play about your, you know, your stupid games and all this? And he runs off. He's all angry. And whatnot, the principal perhaps, and like the school's guidance counselor, or maybe it's like a school shrink, or maybe it's even a social worker. They're making their way down to speak with Charlie. They stop him and he gets angry and he smacks this folder out of the lady's hands. Pages go flying and he runs off. And the woman's like, did you see what he did? And the lady's like, oh yeah, that's just his regular behavior. He's very angry. She says it's understandable because of, you know, the trauma that he had gone through and all that. And then he hasn't been able to find a place to live. He's been shunted from family to family ever since that tragic night. So, you know, it stands to reason that he's an angry kid. You know, you've been given a raw deal and you feel like you don't fit in and all that. So naturally you'd lash out at people who were trying to get close to you. And so he runs off. All of a sudden there's this big fracas as he's running by. It appears that a school bus has collided with something. And as the kid's running down the street, we actually see that it's Guido. It's the story that Guido had told to Doc Sampson back in issue 87 about how he was a kid, he was bullied, and then he was like fighting the one dude, and eventually he like stepped back and hit the bus and all that. So here we see a young Guido going through his mutation for the first time, his very painful physical transformation from like shy, nerdy little guy to like, you know, large muscle bound, you know, gigantic dude. And one of the ladies runs up and she's like, "Charlie, get away from him. He's one of those mutants." And Charlie's like, "Mutant?" And like something clicks in his brain. He remembers, you know, this memory that he had pushed to the back of his mind. And he's like, the person who killed my parents, I wasn't imagining it. He did call himself a mutant. And so he's like seeing the scene in his head again of his parents' fate. And he grabs a rock from nearby, perhaps like a piece of street or something, concrete or whatever. He picks it up and he yells like, you killed my parents. You're evil. And he runs over and he's about to hit Guido in the head. And Guido at this point is lashing out because of his own mutation, and he accidentally hits Charlie and he sends Charlie flying and knocks him unconscious. So already like a few pages of like some pretty heavy stuff. Like Peter David is not pulling his punches here. Obviously this wasn't the last story he wrote, as the annuals were usually written a little bit ahead of time to have all those ducks in a row. He knew what story he wanted to write. So even though he usually writes, you know, more comedic stories, lighter stories, at least so far in this run, we've seen a couple of times where he hasn't been afraid to pull punches and throw some like real serious bits in there. And like now we're getting yet another tragic backstory to a new character. So after he was hit by Guido and he went flying, it turns out he broke his arm, he hurt his leg. And so now he's in the hospital. And we can see that he hates everything. He's just like a very angry kid. He's just like laying here with just this like evil look on his face. He glares at everyone that comes around. He's very, very hateful towards everything else. But he's sharing a room with someone who appears to be like a psych patient. And she keeps talking to ghosts. She keeps claiming that she's speaking to spirits from beyond. And one of the persons is like, you know, why you keep fooling around with that Ouija board, you know, magic, talking to the dead. It's a waste of time. Who would believe in such things? But it gives Charlie Ronalds an idea. And it seems that he's decided that once he gets out of the hospital, he is going to fully dive into the occult. He is going to give himself over to the occult. He's going to figure out how to get in possession of dark powers so that he can strike back against guys like Guido and other mutants that killed his parents. So now we see, we don't know how much time has passed. He still appears to be a very young teenager here, but now he's in here with what appears to be like a, you know, an adoptive family, perhaps a foster family. And he's looking around in the garage for various boxes and things. He finds a cane, and then also the like foster mom realizes that her carving knife is missing. And pretty much what we see at this point is that Charlie Ronalds has turned this like walking cane into like a makeshift like switchblade. Like he's able to press a button and like a blade will pop out of this cane. And he is out in the garage. There's this cat that like keeps rubbing on his legs and everything. And he's about to grab the cat when his next door neighbor, a little girl, opens the door and she yells like, "Mr. Whiskers, time to come home." So the cat runs inside to the neighbor's house. And the boy just watches through the fence and he waits until it's like midnight. And he goes and he puts a can of cat food on the porch outside the kitty door, and he waits to see if the cat will come out, and the cat does, and he does terrible things to this cat, so much so that the next morning the little neighbor, she finds the cat and she screams, you know, she screams in terror. And the boy's foster parents seem to automatically know that it was him that did it. They know that he is strange. At some point they come in, they like kick his door open, and he's just standing in there in the dark. You see his bedroom. He's got like no lights on. He's just got candles everywhere in all the corners, so it's super dim. He's got like, instead of a light bulb hanging from the ceiling, like on a chandelier or whatever, he's replaced it with like a jack-o'-lantern. The parents are like, "We know what you did. You know, we just want you to tell us all about it." And he's like, "What are you talking about?" And they're like, the parents are afraid of him. They're like, we didn't mean to disturb you and all that. He's like, good. He slams the door, tells him stop bothering him. So very dark origin so far for this Charlie Ronalds character. He's gone through a lot of tough stuff in his life. So apparently he is kind of stepping up to becoming like a villain for X Factor. At this point, we change scenes and we finally check in with our titular heroes. And they're on the Phil Donahue show. So, like, what a shout back to 90s pop culture. It took me forever to figure out this was Phil Donahue. He even calls him Phil. And I'm like, why does this guy look familiar? Why do I know this guy? And I'm like, it looks like Newt Gingrich, the way they've drawn him in some of these panels. And I'm like, did he have a talk show before all that stuff? Like, and I'm sitting here racking my brain. And then eventually at the end of the issue, Guido mentions that they were on Donahue. And I was like, oh yes, Bill Donahue. That's right. Oh man. What a like early 90s throwback. I remember my grandma would watch all that stuff. Oh, anyway. So we've got Guido and Lorna, and they're guests on the Phil Donahue show. There's a couple other guests as well, but they're not like major known characters, and they're interviewing the two X Factor members. But it's funny because like we get two panels of them there, but then before we actually see their conversation, the scene changes, and we see that over like the next few pages, it's like two different stories are kind of intertwined. So we actually, Guido and Lorna are on Phil Donahue. We check back in with the rest of the team, the other four members, and also Val. And we see they're finally in their danger room. So if you think back a few issues where Val was explaining that they finally got a danger room and it's going to be mandatory. And then she went to open it and the doorknob fell off. So they're finally in the danger room. And it's just Val, like up in like in a pillbox, and she's just like lobbing projectiles at them, and they're just like blasting these projectiles out of the sky. Quicksilver's like, well, this is ridiculous, and Val's like, yeah, well, you know, budget cuts and all that, like we were never able to finish the danger room. There's no holograms or anything cool. It's just, you know, like clay pigeons and that sort of stuff. So they're in their training, and then Val's new assistant, I guess, kind of opens the door and she's like, hey, just wanted to tell you, like, the show's on. And so they all take a break and they go out to like the monitor room. And so they're watching Lorna and Guido on the Donahue show. And like, there's like a psychiatrist on the show, and they're taking like audience questions, and someone asks them like, if you could be normal, if you were given the opportunity to be normal, would you take it? And Lorna and Guido were like, well, like for us, being a mutant is normal. Like this is our normal. This is just how we are. And like she says, like you wouldn't. Well, again, there's some stuff that can be applied to like today and the way identity politics plays out. So I don't really feel like getting into it. But there's some good points made here, and Guido is able to make some jokes and some lighthearted stuff. At one point, they refer to them as members of X-Force, and he's like, you know, here we go again. He's like, it's X-Factor, you blork, and all that. And then it's like someone somewhere like blasts. I don't even know who does this, like what the implication is here, like who this is coming from. Someone's blasting a TV in like in another room, and we don't know. Of course, then the scene changes and we see that Charlie Ronalds is now a full-grown man who has given himself over fully to the occult. He's like some sort of like a witch doctor now. He wears like a robe and all that. He carries a staff that has like a skull with like horns and stuff on it. I would like to point out he at least uses some electricity now. It appears that his chandelier at least has a light bulb in it, although you can't really see because a lot of his bookcases and such in his room are still using candles. But either way, we check back in with him finally. And he sees Strong Guy on there and he's like, "Strong Guy, huh? Like, what a dumb name. Did you seriously think I wouldn't recognize you, Caracella, or that I would forget what you did to me or what your kind did to my family?" And so like Charlie Ronalds finally makes up his mind that X Factor and Guido in particular, that's who he's going to take his anger out on the most, because Guido did something to him specifically and mutants in general did something to him as well. So he goes out to the roof of his building and he does some like occult spell. He ends up summoning like some evil creature from the pit, some massive creature. It almost looks kind of like a red version of like the thing from Fantasia, you know, at the end of Fantasia. I forget what it's called, but it's like, a big red version of that guy. And they make a deal. He's like, "I want power and I'll give you souls." And the dude's like, "Sounds good. You know, what souls are you going to give me?" And he's like, I want the power to destroy X Factor. Everyone in X Factor, you know, we have to, you know, must pay." And the red dude is like, "X Factor, did you say? Well, what a coincidence, because I seem to have collected quite a few souls of late who also seem to have a hatred for X Factor. So why don't I send them to you and you can go about your business and you can send me the souls of X Factor." So he gives Charlie Ronalds this power that like curses him. He no longer appears as a human being. He now looks corpse-like. He's very, very scary looking, you know, kind of like an undead, like a zombie almost, or like a necromancer that you would expect to see in like a fantasy setting. That's what he looks like now. So from here, we check back in with X Factor. They're all just sitting around their table having a good time. Guido and Lorna are talking about their appearance on Donahue. It looks like the other three guys are playing cards. Rain is reading a book called Howling Mad, which I don't know what that is, but if it's about werewolves, count me in. I would happily read that. And Val is over here and she's like, "What are you guys just sitting around for? You're playing, you're not training, you're just playing cards, you're not doing anything," and all this. And they're like, "Well, you know, sometimes we got to blow off steam." All of a sudden, Quicksilver like looks out the window and he's like, "Everybody down, quick." And there's like this massive blast comes flying in through the window right on the table. And they go to the window and they're like, "What the heck did that?" And like up in the sky, there's this like, it appears to be like a flying car thing, but it's like a gargoyle, like a big giant stone gargoyle thing that they're flying on. And it's this group of people in shadow and they're saying, "X Factor, now is the time for all of you to die. And you will do so at the hands of your greatest enemies, those who died with their thoughts upon death, being that they wanted vengeance on their most hated foes." And, Charon is there. Sharon? I don't know how to say this. And he's like, we've all returned to defeat you. And so he introduces himself. He introduces Professor Vic Chalker, Carnivore, and number one fan. And all of X Factor in unison, they're all like, "Who?" Because they've never heard of any of these people before. And even Guido was like, "Yeah, that figures. Only we could have a bunch of greatest enemies that we've never heard of." It's pretty good. And then Guido also eventually goes on to say, here's how to... He's talking to Sharon and he's like, "Are you sure that we're your greatest enemies? It's not someone else." He's like, Maybe you've gotten us confused with X-Force like everybody else does. He's like, "Here's how to remember. We're the one team that doesn't have any action figures. Not that we're bitter, mind you." So first he laments that they don't have any specific X-Factor trading cards. Of course, I've shared several of my trading cards in the Discord, but I've only shared the cards from the X-Men Series 1. And I just recently got in the mail my X-Men Series 4 or the 95 Fleer Ultra X-Men. So I've got all four base sets from 92 to 95. So I'll probably be sharing a lot more of the X-Factor trading cards in the Discord. So if you're interested in seeing those, make sure you join. We'll plug it at the end. As for action figures, there was a Strong Guy action figure in the 90s Toy Biz line, and there was a Havoc, and there was a Polaris, and there was a Quicksilver. There wasn't a Multiple Man, although eventually there was like a Toy Fair exclusive Multiple Man figure, although I believe that one was in his like green costume with like the triple ball things that he had, you know, that little symbol that he has. There are there are Marvel Legends action figures now of certain X-Factor characters. Like I recently picked up the Marvel 80th anniversary two pack of the 90s Havoc and Polaris. So I've got them. I'm trying to track down a good deal on the Strong Guy because he was a buildable figure during one of the waves. And it's like, all right, I can spend a bunch of money to try to track down all of the action figures that included the buildable parts, but none of those figures in that wave are X-Factor characters. So I'd be buying all these figures that I don't necessarily want, specifically to get the Guido. So I'm trying to track the Guido down. They also did a Multiple Man in the 90s X-Factor costume, but it's super expensive now because it's also really old. So I'm trying to find a good deal on that one. And they still haven't done a 90s X-Factor Wolfsbane yet. So I don't know. But yeah, I've been on this X-Factor kick this whole month. So that's a quick little aside, as I've been trying to track down all the 90s X-Factor Marvel Legends. So far, I've got two of six. Well, two of five that are out. But either way. So yeah, there's some toys, but he's right. Like there wasn't an X-Factor wave. They did an X-Force wave of like two different X-Force waves of action figures where they released like Cable and Cannonball and Domino and a couple Shatterstars. There was like a Gideon. They released like Quark, all these random characters like Caliban, Strife, you know? So there was like an actual line where it's like X-Men, and then underneath X-Men, it would have like the X-Force tagline, but they never did for X-Factor. Oh, well. Anyway, the battle begins in earnest. You know, Strong Guy runs over and he's like, we don't have action figures. And they're like, shut up. And they immediately blast him. Quicksilver's blasting him. The idiot in the big giant suit, he runs over and his first target is Polaris. So she just launches him flying with her magnetic powers because, you know, the idiot's wearing a big metal suit. Carnivore's running around. He tries to take a bite of Wolfsbane. She jumps out of the way. She calls him Devil Dinosaur, which is fun. He hits Jamie, who starts running, who starts turning into a bunch of different dupes. So it's like Carnivore versus Wolfsbane and like six Multiple Men. And so Quicksilver goes to take on Number One Fan. He's just like running around him, because the guy's got these blades that spin really fast, right? But Quicksilver can move faster than that. So he's able to like hit this dude in between as the blades are spinning and all that. And he's like, hey, stay still and slow down or else I won't be able to hit you. Meanwhile, Havoc is going up against Charon with Guido. They're like blasting at him, blasting at the ship and everything. Eventually, Guido is able to jump up on the ship directly and kind of like face off against this Charon guy. Eventually they make this ship thing crash. I still don't even know what it is. Like I said, it looks like a big giant gargoyle, like a stone gargoyle, but it's also this like flying hovercraft thing. Lots of action going on. Eventually Carnivore is able to kind of knock Rain for a loop, and she's a little down and out, and she lands like right before, right in front of Number One Fan, who's like, aha, finally I can do something here. And Quicksilver, again, he's able to run in and he's able to grab Wolfsbane and get out of the way. And Number One Fan is like, oh man, like this, dang it, this guy's too fast. meanwhile, Vic Chalker is back in his exo suit. And he's like, all right, you can use your magnetic powers against my suit, but you won't be able to use it against my laser. Yeah, he says, your magnetic prowess won't do any good against my onboard laser cannons. And she says, you have a real short memory, fella. See, and then she just grabs him and throws him anyway, because, like, he comes close to tell her that, to shoot her with his laser. And she just grabs hold of his suit again and chucks him behind her. And this time he goes flying right at number one fan and he yells, Rick, watch out. So again, they called him Rick. Then they called him Mick. Now they're calling him Rick again. Either way, he's yelling like, Rick, watch out. And then Rick's like, don't worry, Vic, I got you. And he goes to catch him. And he makes the same mistake. He forgets he doesn't have hands. He's only got these fan blades. And he Dewey Coxes him, if you know what I mean. And so this dude's all mad and he's like, dude, how could you do that? Like, I could have handled it myself. I just wanted you to get out of the way. And so then he shoots number one fan with his lasers. And again, Dewey Coxes him, only this time from bow to stern, so you know what I'm saying here. And like Rain's over here like, oh my gosh, like this is terrible and all that. And so we finally come to, that's what, two of three? Two of three of the Chalkers are now out, you know, they're done for. And so we go back in with Havoc and Guido, who are still fighting against Charon. Eventually, Charon tells Guido who he is, sort of. At some point, he tells him. Doesn't look like he tells him yet. So right now, we're going to go check in with Carnivore, who's still fighting all these Jamie dupes. This time, there's like 9 of them, 10 of them. And he bites down on one of the dupe's arms. So Jamie's got his hand in this guy's mouth, this dinosaur's mouth. And he's like, ah, it hurts. And he's like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And he's like, oh, wait, I have an idea. And he stomps his foot and he creates a dupe inside this creature's mouth. And it like explodes the creature's head from the inside out. So pretty gross. Quicksilver runs over and he's like, Madrox, wow, like I can't believe you had it in you. Like I'm super impressed. That was brilliant. And Jamie's like, thanks. And then he throws up on Quicksilver's boots. Next, we check in with Guido yet again. He's still up on that weird gargoyle thing fighting against Charon, who the last time we saw them, he called Guido, he called him Caracella. And Guido's like, wait a minute, how do you know my last name? And the guy's like, it doesn't matter. All that matters is that you beg for, you know, sweet release. And Guido's like, ah, you know, take a hike, bub. And the guy's like, I've been taking a hike for years. Ever since your kind killed my parents, you're evil. And that like jars something in Guido's memory. He's like, wait a minute, is that you, Charlie? Is that you? And he goes, no, it's not. I'm Charo now. And in that time, Havoc was able to like sneak up behind him and gives him this like massive blast and he knocks Charon off this thing. And like the big red beast thing from the pit appears again. And like, as Charon's like falling, he's underneath him and he's like yelling up to him, like, we had a deal. You were supposed to get me all these souls and you didn't. And so because of that, like, I'm going to show you what happened to your parents. This terrible thing, like, you know, your parents were evil people and all this. And the guy, as he's falling, he's like, no. And like the big red creature opens his mouth and like Charlie falls into this creature's mouth, which is like a great flaming maw. And he's shouting like, no, and it disappears. And that's pretty much that, you know, at that point, X-Factor's like, what in the heck is going on? He's like, I can't believe it. Like that's the kid from my youth, like I tried to find him. I tried to apologize. I tried to figure out a way to make things right with him. And I was never able to track him down. Like, this is so strange. And he's like, yeah, that is kind of weird. And so at this point, X-Factor starts, you know, cleaning up the mess. Polaris is there, like picking up the weird thing. Guido finds the cane and he's like holding it like right on like Polaris's rear end. And he's like, oh, I wonder what this button does. And like the knife blade sticks out and it like sticks right into, like gets Polaris right in the rear end. And she's like, yeah. And like, that's how the issue ends. Like, that's how the story ends, with Guido like inadvertently poking Polaris right there. And there you have it. The end of the original Peter David run on X Factor. Here, 5 episodes later, 5 parts later, we've covered 20 some issues nearly. And, it was a lot of fun. I've had so much fun going back through this run. I know it's super short, super small run compared to like pretty much every run on everything. You know, like, we haven't really seen a run. I guess like Len Wein's run on X-Men, which was Giant Size X-Men, and then like co-writing the first 2 issues with Claremont, with all the art from Cockrum. Like, that's probably the shortest run, right, on X-Men up to this point. So it's interesting, you know, very short run, super underrated and overlooked. And the quality of the book, like I said, it kind of starts to fall off a little bit until J.M. DeMatteis comes in, and he carries it, I think, all the way up to about issue 100. That's when we get like Forge comes in, we get the story with Haven and the Adversary and all that stuff. It's a fairly interesting story. It establishes, you know, Forge as he's taken over the liaison position for Val Cooper. So now it's all mutants. And it's fun. Like, we see the return of Sinister and the Nasty Boys and Malice as well. Not too bad, not too bad. Like I said, J.M. DeMatteis is able to bring in a lot of the humor and kind of keep Jamie and Guido as like the funny guys. Although Rain kind of doesn't really get a whole lot of involvement after this. Same thing goes for Quicksilver. And then after issue 100, like the quality really does fall off. It keeps getting entangled in all these different crossovers. We get even more adversary stuff with Forge. They start introducing new team members. Other people leave, like Guido leaves the team because he has a heart attack while he's fighting the Blob. There's all these weird things that happen. Rain leaves the team after Jamie's death. And so all you have left is like Havoc and Polaris. And so they bring in Forge, and like Shard comes in and joins the team. Mystique joins the team. Wildchild joins the team. And we just see the quality of the book continue to drop. I forget who takes the writing duties over. We get some good artwork. I think eventually like Jeff Matsuda comes on the book, and we actually get some decent artwork there. It's not my favorite, but like it's pretty serviceable. There's a couple other guys that come in and do have a few decent runs of the art as well. But just overall, I think like the last 30 issues, especially last 45, even the quality just kind of does a nosedive. There's some interesting concepts, but they really never get enough of a shakedown. And eventually the book is canceled with issue 149. And so I think like all of those issues that happen like after issue number 100 has kind of given 90s X Factor this reputation of not being very good. And because of that, I feel like the Peter David, that initial Peter David run, is so overlooked, and it's so underappreciated, especially the artwork from Larry Stroman. It's so stylized, it's so unique, and it's so fitting for the tone of this series. It's really very good. So if you've never read these stories, but you've had a good time going back through this run with me, I highly recommend that you jump in and you read it for yourself. Like, hold the pages in your hand, or hold the tablet in your hand as you're scrolling through these pages. But definitely go back through and read, because it really is a great run. It's, as you can tell, it's not very long, you know, 20 issues. So do yourself a favor. If you've not ever enjoyed this firsthand, don't just let these last 5 episodes be your only introduction to the story. Go back and read it yourself and enjoy it. There's a lot of little jokes that I left out. There's a lot of more serious stories that happen. There's a lot of serious dialogue and situations the characters find themselves in that I do kind of gloss over for the sake of just covering the larger story, and definitely things that were missed by myself going through these issues. So go back through and read it for yourself. I highly recommend it. So there you have it, you Blork. That is my coverage of Talkin' GC, the X Factor show. That is my coverage of the initial Peter David run of the early 1990s X Factor. I hope you loved it as much as I did. Because this past month was super long, we had 5 Wednesdays, and I covered a lot of comics in that time, nearly 20 issues, 2 annuals. Like 3 of those issues themselves were double-sized issues. And we even covered like 3 issues of The Incredible Hulk. It's a lot of stuff to have covered over the last 5 weeks. And although it's been very fun, it's also been very tiring to go through, get prepared for all of this to drop week by week. So look for less episodes in April. I'm thinking 2 episodes in April of Talkin' Snick. There's a couple of things that I really want to cover. I also want to regroup. I'm working on some stuff for Snicktoons, working on finishing up my guest spots for season 4. So I've been fairly busy with that. So don't look for any major theme for the month of April. Like I said, there's maybe probably 2 episodes that will come out next month. And there's a couple of things I want to cover. And then, yeah, I'll be brainstorming ideas. So hopefully by the time May rolls around, I'll have hit on a new topic for that month, and we can just dive right in to whatever we will be talking about on Talkin' Snicked proper. And it's been a while since we've really done a Wolverine-centric Talkin' Snicked episode. I think the last time I did weekly episodes for a full month was like October of last year, and that was for Talkin' Bamf when we covered the Nightcrawler series. And even that like was only 1 issue per episode, 4 episodes for 4 issues, so not nearly as tiring. So I'll be brainstorming some ideas. As I always say, like I'm open to suggestions and requests and all kinds of stuff. So if you would like to get a suggestion to me or make a recommendation or even just ask questions, provide feedback, whatever, you can reach out to me via email, talksnicked@gmail.com, talksnicked@gmail.com. If you're looking for something a little bit more personable, then consider joining the Talkin' Snicked Discord. There will be a link for it in the show notes. It's good for about 7 days. So if you aren't able to get to it by the time you know you've listened to this episode, if 7 days has transpired and there's not a new episode with a new link, then shoot me an email and I'll get the invite link sent out to you to join the Talkin' Snicked Discord. Fun little community. It's not going to take up a whole lot of your time, but if you're a Wolverine fan and an X-Men fan and you just want to talk about the fandom, talk about the things you love about these comics, these cartoons, your own pieces of your own collection, whatever, then consider joining the Discord. One other thing, if you listen on Spotify, there's a new feature since I use Anchor as my hosting where I can actually add like a little Q&A question to every episode. So if you're listening in Spotify, check it out, click the link for the episode and there should be like a little question in there. And I think you have like 285 characters to answer. Usually it's just 1 question, usually that pertains to the episode that came out that week. You know, what's your opinion on whatever? So definitely check that out if you are a Spotify listener. Other than that, I think that's all there is to say. Just keep looking for new Snicktoons episodes every Saturday as we make our way through season 4, and look for a couple more episodes of Talkin' Snicked to drop in April as we finally return to some sort of Wolverine coverage. Until next time, bub.